Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian. And then there were four. The final four of the NFL is what is remaining here. And we have an awesome quartet of quarterbacks with Brady and Rodgers. And then the younger guys, Josh Allen and hopefully Patrick Mahomes. What that means for the point spread, the uncertainty surrounding Mahomes, we'll talk to in moments with John Murray, executive director of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. And we're also going to be joined by our quarterback, first time here on the podcast, Dan Orlovsky, who does a wonderful job breaking down video and just any sort of matchup. And he's just been awesome. He joined us on the Megacast for those that listened and then here and then watched on the Megacast, certainly knows his stuff. And obviously, if you've seen anything on ESPN, you know he knows his stuff. So I'm going to ask him about each quarterback, sort of the storyline going into this game, and then what he expects from Mahomes, because Dan has actually suffered the same toe injury twice, he said. So we'll pick his brain on all of these quarterbacks. I asked him a question or two about each one, and then we'll wrap things up with the bonanza. I took a step back, still in the black, but need to widen my lead for Murray and the Prince of Props. So a lot to get through as we break down Championship Sunday. But before we do that, I want to quickly remind you that Conor McGregor returns to the Octagon January 23rd in a rematch against Dustin Poirier at UFC 257, only on ESPN Plus. UFC 257 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNPlus.com/pay-per-view. And if you missed the UFC pod, we did that with Matthew Holton and also Ariel Helwani. Talked a little football there as well, but also his interview with Conor McGregor and what he has seen and what he expects from McGregor's return to the Octagon. So go check that out. That was taped and posted yesterday. Also, we have a brand new ESPN podcast launching this week. You know about First Take, but how about First Take Her Take? This new podcast is hosted by Charlie Arnault and Kimberly Martin and Shanae Ogumike. They discuss and debate the biggest sports stories and delve into topics about their lives and culture. Subscribe, rate, and review First Take, Her Take, as well as Behind the Bets, wherever you get your podcasts.
Kicking is for losers.
Kicking is most definitely for losers, and it was a cliche that we didn't think would rear its ugly head against the best kicker of all time in Justin Tucker, but not one, but two uprights, and things like that just happened. I don't think we can blast the Ravens for kicking field goals as we bring in Mr. Executive Director John Murray.
And Tucker missed a field goal the wild card round, too, against Tennessee, right? So he missed three field goals during the postseason. Is that right?
I don't recall, but yeah, I think you're right. The announcer jinx it was definitely in effect.
Well, nobody would have ever believed that Justin Tucker would miss three field goals in one postseason. I'll tell you that much. No, and as much as I make fun of kicking, even I would admit that you're pretty safe having Justin Tucker line up for a field goal.
Yeah, so the Ravens are unable to get the offense going. They're eliminated. The Bills kind of get back on track. It's something we talked about, or at least I did, like last week, saying, oh, everyone's going to say they're lucky to be there, blah, 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 and kind of law of averages. So the books score one for the good guys, huh? The public wins.
Yeah, not a good weekend for us. You know, we really needed the Rams to at least cover in the first game of the weekend. Everybody was on Green Bay. Green Bay, by far the most popular public side of the week. And then there was a lot of money actually came in on Cleveland on the morning of that game. You saw that number go down from 10, 9.5, all the way down to 8, 7.5 in some places. But the Chiefs won the game. So a lot of the money line parlays from Saturday that went to Kansas City carried through to that game, won on that game. And we also lost on all the people who took Cleveland plus the points. So that wasn't a good result for us either. It saved us on Sunday night, because all the four-team money line parlays of the four favorites did go down with New Orleans losing to Tampa Bay, and we were a small winner on that game. But that was really the only positive I can say about the weekend. What we never got this year was a big underdog winning outright. You know, last year in the wild card round, we had Minnesota winning in New Orleans as about a touchdown dog. And then in the divisional round, of course, we had Baltimore losing, the one seed Baltimore losing at home to Tennessee. The books made out huge on that game. We never got that result in this postseason.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And then even Sunday night, the public was really on the Bucks, right? So the underdog in that game, hence the number coming down below three. So sharp money, and really for the most part, public money too. And the Saints had that game. Obviously, the turnovers is what did them in, and give the Bucks, give the Bucks credit. But, Drew Brees and his injuries and his noodle arm were able to get enough done against this Bucks defense. But it was the securing of the football that cost him.
You could say that in the wild card round, Cleveland was that dog that came through for us, and you wouldn't be totally wrong. But there wasn't nearly as much money line action as the Steelers as there was on some of these other games we mentioned, or the games last year. But you're right. There was a lot of money on Tampa Bay, but we still won on the game because of the money line parlays of all the favorites. I felt like, personally, that New Orleans kind of gifted that game to the Buccaneers. Some short fields they set up the Tampa Bay offense with. But Tampa Bay took advantage of those short fields, and they punched in the touchdowns when they needed to. So I give them credit. But as we turn the page to this weekend, I just don't see Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay turning the ball over four times. Aaron Rodgers doesn't turn the ball over. Aaron Rodgers doesn't give the game away. I know he turned the ball over a couple times in their first meeting, but I just don't see him doing that at home in the NFC Championship game. I really don't.
All right, well, let's talk about that first game. We'll get to Mahomes in a moment and the injury uncertainty, but Packers are 3 or 3.5 at a lot of shops, and this is interesting because Brady has been the darling of a lot of bettors, especially in the last month. It's a public dog yet again, but it's a third straight road game for Tampa Bay. Cold weather, obviously Brady should be fine, but the rest of the guys, and we'll talk to Dan Orlovsky in a little bit about sort of that, how that kind of will manifest itself in this game. But what's the book going to need?
We're going to need Green Bay, and Green Bay is going to be our biggest need of this weekend, even bigger of a need than Dustin Poirier will be on Saturday night. We're going to need the Packers huge. It's about 60% of the money in the tickets right now is on Tampa Bay. And then you've also got to factor in, or at least consider, the conference futures that you're dealing with. We win big on Green Bay in the NFC pool, and we lose on Tampa Bay in that same pool. We lose big on Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl futures. You don't want that to influence your decision-making too much. You want to try to book it separately. You don't want to give away money based on your futures needs, but you can't help but keep that in the back of your mind. We know that for futures purposes, we need Green Bay big. And we're riding mostly bets on Tampa Bay for the game itself. So the Packers are going to be a pretty big need for the house on Sunday afternoon. And that's kind of strange. Green Bay is a 3.5-point favorite, 3-point favorite, depending on where you look. They've been rolling along. They're the one seed. They won easily on Saturday. They had a bye before that. And now everybody's lining up to bet against them.
Where's the sharp money on that game?
Well, we did have a guy that we really respect. The only bet that I would call sharp that we've seen this weekend in the NFL, a guy we respect very much, came in on Tuesday. When we got down to Green Bay -3, -110, he played the Packers at that number. So he didn't play Green Bay -3, -125. He didn't play Green Bay -3.5 even. He played Green Bay -3, -110.
You know, it is fascinating. We've talked about it a lot in the show, but just remind people, 3 is the most common margin of victory in the history of the NFL, especially with the last six seasons since the extra point moved back. It's 14.1%, I believe it is. It is the key number, and the juice is a part of that 3. I mean, if you want to get technical, it's like 3.1 versus 3.3, but obviously you're not laying that points, but that's what you have to factor in. So the juice is very important. And if you think of the bell curve in terms of like where it is, like it necessitates you win a certain percentage more to break even point kind of thing. So that's why it's so valuable. And that's why we talk about it so much. And I know when there's only a couple games like this weekend, that's not that fun to like, well, I'm waiting for the juice to move, but just absorb it, learn a little bit about the business. Doesn't mean you can't bet -3, -20 or something like that. And I know some books only charge 20 cents. To buy off of 3. So if it gets to 3.5 and you can buy it for 20 cents, that actually makes mathematical sense to go from like 130 or from -110 to 130. The break even point is 56.5% instead of 52.4. So just things to keep in mind, and kind of as we all evolve as a sports betting landscape across the country, I think that's something to keep in the back of your mind. I like the Packers a lot. I think the Bucs are a little bit of a farce. Not a lot of a farce, but a little bit of a kind of a mirage.
An impressive defensive performance from Tampa Bay on Sunday for sure. But
was
again,
it?
I'll
was
point
it
to
though?
Turnover. I mean, just the way that they shut down the Saints. But you're right. I mean, there were some really bad throws by Breeze. I heard some reports after the game that Breeze was banged up going into that game. Whether
his
he was banged up or not.
Yeah, right.
I mean, whether he was hurt or not, the bottom line is he's pretty old. You know, he's obviously well past his prime. And like I said earlier, I don't see Aaron Rodgers doing that. I don't see Aaron Rodgers gifting turnovers to the Buccaneers defense. I don't think the Buccaneers are going to be able to win this game with nothing but their defense and capitalizing on short fields. I think that they're going to have to produce some long drives on offense. Can they do that against Green Bay's defense? Well, I mean, we'll see. Green Bay really shocked us on Saturday with how well they manhandled the Rams on the offensive and defensive lines. You know, the Rams on Saturday was considered a really sharp play. Green Bay was a very big public play, and Green Bay was the right side in that game. It was no fluke. They were running the ball right up the middle against the Rams, and they really manhandled them up front. I know Aaron Donald was hurt, and I get that, but
he didn't play. He was on the sideline for some of that, and I would say the sharp play was at plus seven, which is where the line was until that release touchdown, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. The sharp play was definitely a plus seven on the Rams, but Green Bay really manhandled them, and Tampa Bay is going to have to step it up because they're not going to get those kind of turnovers gifted to them this week, not by Aaron Rodgers.
And Rodgers missed a couple throws. Let's not forget that. That was a little bit of a rust. At least I'm going to say it is.
What was Rodgers doing at the end of the first half? It looked like at the end of the first half he was going for the jugular. He just forced those two throws into the end zone that weren't there, and the Rams dropped both interceptions.
Yeah.
So I say Rodgers doesn't turn the ball over, and he doesn't, but he was certainly fortunate there. Before the end of the half, he just threw the ball into like double coverage, trying to end the game there in the second quarter, and he was lucky he didn't get picked off. He's not going to be able to get away with that this weekend.
No, he's not. No, he's not. And let's talk about the other game now, because that's the big storyline right now with Mahomes' injury. And I was texting with your colleague, Ed Sammons, and we had a really interesting discussion. He opened my eyes about a couple things. And I thought it was shocking at first, but I was like, you know what? He's spot on. And it's sort of like, what's this line close with or without Mahomes? And so right now we're Chiefs minus three, and it's sort of baked into the line that you guys kind of assume Mahomes is going to play.
Oh, we definitely think Mahomes is going to play. We wouldn't have a number on this game unless we were pretty confident that we knew what the quarterback situation was going to be on Sunday. You don't put a lineup on a game with a team or with a player like Patrick Mahomes unless you're very confident he's either going to be in or out. We definitely expect him to be in. The money is absolutely on Buffalo. Buffalo is getting about 70% of the tickets on this game, which, again, is kind of surprising. You got a team in Kansas City. They're the defending Super Bowl champions. They were 14-1 until they rested their starters in Week 17. Now they're in the AFC Championship game for the third straight year. They're only laying a field goal, and everybody's rushing to the window to bet against them. So kind of fascinating betting to me in the AFC title game. Maybe people think that Mahomes is not 100% or that he might even miss the game. I don't agree with that, but I certainly expect him to play. But it's interesting to me seeing all this money coming in on the Bills.
Well, he's got the toe injury, too. It's not just concussion uncertainty. But the Chiefs have not exactly looked great. They haven't covered since Halloween. So something to keep in mind. Yeah. I'll say this. So what Ed and I were talking about, he thinks the line would only go to about 3.5 tops, maybe four. But it's not going to move that much because it's kind of assuming that Mahomes is playing already. He thinks he wouldn't be shocked because of that key number three, that it would not move off three. But he said if he's out, this thing could go to Bills minus six. And I thought that was that took me back. I was like, well, that's pretty high. He goes, well, last year the Vikings and I forget the other team were both road 5.5-point favorites at Kansas City. And this Bills team's better than those teams.
Well, Ed was saying seven in the room on Sunday, which I made fun of him for. So maybe he like pared his number down a little bit to impress you. And he said six to you. But I didn't agree with him saying seven on Buffalo. And I also don't think this number is going to go above three. Because even at Kansas City three, everybody's taking the Bills now.
Right.
So I'd be surprised if this thing, why would we need to go to 3.5 on Kansas City? We're riding all the Buffalo money we can take right now at Chiefs minus three. I mean, you never say never. It's not impossible. And I do see some of the offshore books juicing the 3 a little bit on Kansas City. But I would be surprised to see a 3.5 and certainly a 4 on this game because the people are already betting on the Bills now.
Yeah, that's basically saying, why would I give them 3.5 if they're going to take 3? It's kind of like with the back in the old school Cavs days with the line. They're going to lay 10. Why do I have to make them lay 9? Yeah.
Kansas City was on track to cover that game, talking about the Cleveland game, until Mahomes got hurt. And I don't want to second guess the Chiefs too much because I know that their play callers are brilliant guys. But why are they running an option play with Patrick Mahomes on a 3rd-and-1? It's just a crazy play. I mean, I know that's how they scored their touchdown earlier in the game, but you've got Patrick Mahomes, maybe not the best thing in the world to be running the option with Patrick Mahomes and risking injury. I know it's easy to say that now, but maybe keep limit the hits on Patrick Mahomes. He's kind of a valuable player to that franchise.
Yeah. No, I agree with it. There was definitely some question marks on that front. So are you okay if Mahomes it doesn't go, it's 5.5? Would that feel right to you?
I don't think it's quite that high, but I mean, I'll defer to Ed on that. I mean, he was pretty adamant about it. That number seems
no
very
one's
high.
Gonna take no one's gonna bet the Chiefs. No one's gonna bet the Chiefs if it's +3. Okay, no one. So you got to go above 3. At 4,
that's,
you might get
I never said 3, but Ed said 7 in the room. So now we're going down to 6 and 5.5. So we're just changing what was actually said, I guess. Revisionist.
Well, I asked him yesterday, so I can only go off what I asked him yesterday. Okay. I don't know what was said Sunday. You do.
Maybe we made fun of him so much.
That's good.
That he knocked a point and a half off of his number.
Collaborative.
But it's not even, you know what? It's not even something I'm considering right now. And the only way that Mahomes would miss this game would be if he had a positive COVID test or something in the next couple of days, because there's no way those injuries are going to keep him out of this game. No chance.
He's got an independent review, so as long as that goes as everyone thinks it is, because look, we've seen quarterbacks not be cleared for the next game, right? Andy Dalton comes to mind earlier this year, and now he wasn't running in the tunnel after that hit, right? Like Mahomes was. So Mahomes looked like the hit wasn't as severe, but the last quarterback I can think of who was able to play the next game was actually Josh Allen the previous season. So 2019, when he got hit against the Patriots and Barkley came in and finished the game, I believe Allen was playing the next game. So it's not that common, to be honest, to leave under the concussion protocol and be able to play the next game. Now, like I said, Mahomes is running around and things like that. So hopefully the injury is not as severe as some of the other ones, but it's not that crazy to think it could, like an independent physician could rule it a no-go.
I guess I'm just a cynical guy because I can't believe that Patrick Mahomes would miss the AFC Championship game. But I've been wrong before many times about the NFL. I've been wrong.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's not about like limp his toe injury. It's not about the toughing it out or whatever. This isn't Jay Cutler on the sideline with his walking around in the NFC Championship game with his knee thing that everyone's wondering why he can't play. It's like literally whether you pass like some neurological exam. So. Okay. And so it's going to be interesting. Look, I like both. I like Packers and I like the Bills, but I'm not ready to bet the Bills at all. I just think it's too short of a number. Yeah. I just think I need more to fade this Mahomes led Chiefs team, but I do think the Bills have the goods. And part of me thinks this Kansas City team is just like a little off, you know, for whatever reason. I don't think their defense is that strong. I think they got some running issues. They don't run the ball that effectively. And I think the Bills do have a dynamic enough quarterback to get it done. So I lean Bills, but I will not be picking them in the baby bankroll bonanza. And we will be discussing that in a little bit, Murray. So any final thoughts here with props or anything like that that stand out before we let you go and rejoin later?
No, I'll have to update that kind of stuff as we get closer to the weekend. You know, the props are coming out later and later now because you never know when players are going to be ruled out of these games. But we can certainly talk a little bit more about that this weekend on Twitter.
Okay, sounds good. Looking forward to that. And we're looking forward to reconnecting later in the baby bankroll bonanza.
It's not even so much me as it's Ronick. He's good.
Oh, is that right?
Time now for the first time here on the Behind the Bets podcast to bring in one of our quarterback specialists, Dan Orlovsky. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing good, Doug. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well, thanks. I know we talked during the MegaCast, but I wanted to get you on for our audience just because you do such a great job breaking down all things, but the quarterbacks are such a big theme for this weekend. So I really wanted to pick your brain and go through each guy. I want to start in the NFC, actually. Just the cold weather is such a thing, and Rodgers talks about it. He's like, yeah, it's cold for us, but it's miserable for them, or I think that was the quote, something along those lines. So given Brady's experience, obviously, New England, but some of these Bucks offensive players don't have a ton of experience. I just guess, like, how do you think Brady will be able to perform, whether it's timing with the receivers and everything, if we do get some snow and frigid temps?
Yeah, I don't think that the weather is going to have a tremendous impact on this football game. A couple of reasons why. You mentioned Tom and his experience in New England. Two, offensive linemen, which are half the offense, they don't care about weather. So those guys in Tampa Bay's offensive line will be completely fine. Tristan Wirfs, an Iowa kid, so he's experienced it, obviously, plenty. Now, to the skill players, that's when it does become a conversation. You know, Mike Evans has been in Tampa for a while now. Chris Godwin played at Penn State, so he's experienced a little bit. But when it comes to, like, the timing and the rhythm of stuff, if this was, you know, Tom Brady's style of offense 5 years ago and he was playing in Tampa, then I would feel completely different, because 5 years ago it was about the timing and anticipation and quick passing game and the accuracy of the short throws and, you know, the efficiency of that stuff. But that's not what they do in Tampa. It is the hard ball play action and push the ball downfield. And so when you do that, there is a less of an emphasis or a necessity for timing and anticipation and rhythm, because the windows are likely bigger and the room to throw to a guy is greater. And so I don't see the weather in Green Bay having, like, this tremendous impact on the performance of the offense. I think it's bigger, you know, will they decide to throw at Jair Alexander or away from him? You know, how good can Mike Evans match up? Does Chris Godwin stop dropping the football? Like, some of those things, I think, have a greater impact on this game rather than the weather.
Interesting. Well presented. I like how you took me through that. That's interesting. I want to go to the other side of the ball. Jeff Saturday was on the podcast, I don't know, about a month and a half ago or so, and obviously former teammate of Aaron Rodgers. And he said that, like, Rodgers just, like, locked in terms of his preparation. Like, he knows what the defense is doing before almost they do in terms of, like, where they're positioning and the audibles and just kind of in a zone, if you will. And I wonder if you kind of see the same thing, and how much, like, Rodgers you think will be able to handle this defense that he obviously struggled with way back when earlier in the regular season.
Yeah, you know, Aaron has looked locked in since week one. Now, I remember the week one game against Minnesota when he looked like the best he had in 5 years. I actually said it on television and Aaron responded to it, but he just looked so in control. And there's a difference between, like, having a great feel for what's going on and controlling what's going on. And that's the way that Aaron looks right now. Now, their offense does a great job of two things. One, they get, it's almost like watching the Warriors play basketball during the Splash Brothers and KD era, where it was layups and three-pointers. They did not care about the mid-range game. That's kind of Packers' offense. Like, Aaron does a remarkable job of, when Matt LaFleur calls a play, that the goal is, hey, I just want you to get the ball out of your hands. Let's get 4 yards here. Like, these simplified completions, open things that are quick RPOs or bubbles or one-step slants, Aaron obliges. Like, he's just like, fine, I got it. I know why you're calling this play. And that's why there's that control at the line of scrimmage. And then there's the, we're taking our shots here. We're going to try to hit the three-pointer, and we're going to push the ball downfield. And whether it's the hard ball play action or the one-on-one matchup with, like, a guy like Devontae. And that's when Aaron separates himself from basically the other 28 starters in the NFL. Is, you know, he's one of those guys that is going to make those 4 or 5 holy smokes type of throws a game. And when you are confident in doing that, I don't know what it's like, but I would imagine you get to line of scrimmage like, what's up, man? Like, there's nothing you can do that makes me feel uncomfortable. And so, you know, it's just been a great, you know, we use the phrase marriage. I think it's been a great understanding by both him and Matt LaFleur of the whys of play calling. And that's why we've seen him play at such a remarkable level this year.
And given their regular season matchup after that 10-0 game was pretty dot, like, any concern there in terms of just a matchup issue, or is that just, you know, ebbs and flows of the regular season and you don't expect similar struggles here?
Yeah, no, I do not. You know, it's funny because I've heard a lot of people say this week, man, Tampa Bay absolutely buried Green Bay in week six. That's not what the tape says. The tape says that it was a 10-0 ball game, and then on 3rd and 10, he threw a pick six for a touchdown. And then on another 3rd and 10, they didn't pick up a blitz that I've seen them pick up 25 times since that game. And they missed five in the second quarter alone. They missed five big plays Green Bay does offensively that I'm not going to bank on their quarterback or their team missing again. One to Aaron Jones down the sideline, one to Mercedes Lewis down the middle of the field, one on six on, against two men where Aaron's got this huge seam where he normally takes off and runs and he just doesn't. And so, you know, I'm not going to bank on those guys and Aaron not hitting those plays. So I think that's a very, very different performance from Green Bay's offense.
Yeah, we and a different venue too. Obviously, Lambeau in January is going to be different than Tampa in warm weather. But yeah. I do think we get some – there's a little recency bias. Now, obviously, it didn't happen last week, but sometimes we throw that around a lot in our world. Let's go to the AFC. I'll start we'll save Mahomes for the end and just go with Josh Allen. I mean, this team is clicking for times, and then it was kind of a weird game last week, right? All things considered, especially for this yep. Bills offense that's been able to do a lot. How do you think this Kansas City defense, many people criticize, is their like Achilles heel, their weakness, whatever you want to – how do you think this Bills offense with Josh Allen can perform and kind of get – how many points can they score?
Yeah, they'll have to score a lot. They can score a bunch as well. You know, that's one of the reasons why they have the ability to beat Kansas City. They can be explosive. I think for their offense, one, Josh Allen's got to go into this game mentally the same way he went to Indy. You know, his best friend has got to be Cole Beasley and Devin Singletary out of the backfield. Kansas City's going to force him to play patient, force him to play disciplined, force him to go to the bank and just make the simple $100 deposit, $100 deposit, $100 deposit. And he's got to hold back against trying to put everything in the bank at once, try to force the ball against some of their zones, because that's what they did in week six. And then, you know, Doug, you've heard the phrase like, a defensive lineman, they have to earn the right to rush the quarterback, right? You got to earn the right on first and second down, stopping the run to rush the quarterback. This is a game where Josh Allen has to earn the right to throw to Stephon Diggs in man-to-man coverage situations. Because Kansas City's going to line up and play some of their two high zones, especially early on, and just force, all right, dude, you this big monster at quarterback. Are you going to play boring football? And if he does that, Kansas City will play man-to-man coverage, and they're good at it. And they'll come after him with blitzes, and they'll play zero. And that's when Stephon Diggs makes his impact on this game. So he's got to do a good job of that. Will we feel the loss of Zach Moss for Buffalo in this game? Because – you know, when you're playing a team that's going to play too high, you got to run the ball a little bit, just a little bit. And he was the guy to do it for them a little bit. So I'll be interested to see if Singletary can kind of carry the load a little bit in the run.
Really, really interesting. And the analogies I'm just loving so far. Finally, let's talk about Mahomes. Let's say he is cleared. What sort of limitation? I mean, it's hard to project. Obviously, you're not a doctor. And obviously, if they're going to clear him, he's fine. But he had the ankle. He was limping around. And you wonder if he's going to be a little gun-shy to run. I don't know. Maybe Andy Reid's play calling will be different, too, on some of those short yardage situations. Like, what are you expecting from him?
I 100% expect Patrick Mahomes to play in this football game. I have very, very little concern about the head. I had tons of respect for the whole concussion process and protocol. Don't get me wrong. But I'm a little bit more paying attention to the toe. It looked like he had turf toe. And I've had turf toe twice. It stinks, man. It is a brutal, painful, annoying injury. Now, what do I expect is they'll give him a shoe that's one size bigger. They'll put a steel plate at the bottom of it. And that what that does is it doesn't allow for much bending of that toe. That's when turf toe really gets painful. They'll tape it up and they will shoot right into the middle of that bone. And it stinks, man. But it allows you to go play football as well as you can. So I don't think that it looked brutal. I don't think that it looked like this turf toe that was going to hold him back. I think that because of the play, taping, and the shot, he'll be relatively effective. And knowing I got 2 weeks off after this, I got 2 weeks that as long as I play as good and as tough as I can, we get to go to the Super Bowl again.
Right, and then you can worry about the pain later after that. Let's say it is Chad Henne. Let's say the protocol and things don't, the five steps don't happen. what can Chad Henne do? Like, what's his ceiling kind of thing?
Can Chad Henne be good enough to win one game? I'd say more often than not, absolutely. Buffalo's a different animal. I mean, you're going to have to score points to beat Buffalo. And, you know, having, you know, in many ways, I sent this tweet out during the Cleveland game. Kansas City's probably set up as good as anybody in that situation to have Chad Henne play. They got a quarterback coach in Mike Kafka who's been there. He knows what's real and what's not. You know, so they're always prepared. Two, he's got an aggressive play caller that is completely aware of and understanding of how to get quarterbacks in rhythm and give them easy stuff. And then Kelce and Hill. I mean, those are a big deal. So, you know, I think he could play good enough to keep them in the football game and give them a chance. But I don't know if Chad can do, you know, if you go back and watch the Week 6 game, really a huge difference maker in that game is our Patrick Mahomes' legs. And is Chad going to be in those moments of 3rd and 8? You know, is Chad going to be versatile enough and dangerous enough to move with his feet? That would be concerning to me.
And speaking of the legs, what kind of mobility will Mahomes have if he plays with that steel plate and everything in the pocket and be able to do all that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's okay. You know, again, I remember having two of them, and you're not 100%, but you can still move around and you can still kind of get what's done, what's needed to be necessary. Here's the thing for me. You know, if he plays in the toe, I'll be interested to see if Buffalo blitzes him heavy, which is not something you should do or that they did do against him. But because of the toe, I'd be interested to see if they pressure him off his left side, off his backside. You know, because if some of those pressures get home or start to get through, quarterback's natural inclinations is to put our foot in the ground and drive to our right and get away from it. And so will they test to see if he's able to do that and how comfortable he is doing that. And so a lot of it is left to be seen, but I would imagine he'll still be relatively functional.
So it'll be part of his game, at least something for the defense to think about. All right, Dan, thanks so much, man. This was excellent breakdown. So interesting. Really appreciate your taking the time. I know our listeners appreciate it as well.
You got it, buddy.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, time now. Things are leveling out, Mr. Executive Director. I've gotten a little cold. I think I was on a tear with, you know, eight of nine winning weekends or whatever it was. But I've stubbed my toe. How's the Prince of Props been doing?
He had a play on Sunday. I can't remember what it was. It lost by a yard. I remember that.
Oh, that's
he was very upset about that. I think it was, gosh, what was it? I don't even remember. Kareem Hunt. And it was funny. They wouldn't give Kareem Hunt the ball, but it seemed like every time they did, he had a lot of success. I don't know what Cleveland was doing there. I didn't think much of Kevin Stefanski, the performance by Kevin Stefanski on Sunday morning, tell you the truth. I think I might have even tweeted that the Browns were better off when he was stuck in his basement the previous weekend. I thought his game day decision making on Sunday was very poor.
Well, that hurt the prop. So here we are. I dropped a little over 2K in this imaginary bankroll. So I'm up 44.75 for the season, and you're minus 3,400, Murray. So you got some. I left the door cracked open. You did not storm through, but we still left time. Yeah. And I'm going to go heavy here. I might have to play back a little bit in game, but I don't trust the Bucs at all. I don't think they're going to go wire to wire. I think they're typically slow starters unless they play bad teams. I like the Packers to jump on them. I think this is a special Packers team. I'm going to put 5 dimes on the Packers, -3, -20. And I'm actually looking at the offshore odds accidentally. So hopefully there is a place in town that has -20.
Let me see. I've got the trusty screen.
Treasure
here.
Island.
Hold on.
Treasure Island and BetMGM, I'm seeing.
Treasure Island -3, -120. Yeah, you're good. That Treasure Island is absolutely a local shop.
All right. So 6K to win 5K.
So I do like Green Bay on Sunday afternoon, the early game, but I'm going to hope to get a better number between now and Sunday. I'll obviously tag you on Twitter, tag Bonanza Burner on Twitter. He's been a nice intern for us.
Yeah, he really has.
Obviously, I'm going to definitely be talking to the Prince of Props. He's very emotional. You know, he lost that Drew Brees prop by a yard 2 weeks ago, and then he lost the Kareem Hunt prop by a yard last week. he's out for blood. He wants to come back and beat you because he thinks that you're there laughing at him. You're laughing behind the scenes at him, DK. So he really he's seeing red right now, and he's coming for you this weekend.
Laughing is strong. No, I'm enjoying it. Enjoying the chase. How about that? In more ways than one. Look, we've all been there. We've all been caught a couple bad ones. Yesterday, I had a huge play on the Clippers first half team total. Loses by a hook. It's pretty painful. When you have 5.5 seconds to go, why not have one of the Morris twins bring up the ball instead of Kawhi, PG, Lou Williams? Yeah, let's have a Morris and then shoot an off-balance three. Let's do that. So I've been there. We've all been there. It's painful, especially when you go on national TV or in this case, national podcasts and give out picks. I understand the pressure and the guilt. So I sympathize with the Prince of Props. Doesn't mean I'm rooting for him, but I do sympathize with the Prince of Props. So I'm only at 5K. You got lucky, Murray. I myself got involved with a heavy teaser. Once the Chiefs came down, I said, all right, that's it. I'm in. And I grabbed the two and then even kept going to 7.5. And I had 1.5, teased the Bucks up to 8.5. Because at that point it was at 2.5. So I did well with the teaser, a late teaser that I did not do with the Bonanza. So I wanted to save my lead for more weeks, obviously, to go.
Well, there's only three more games. There's not much time left for me to rest on my laurels here. I'm going to have to come after you this weekend, and I plan on it fully.
Okay, good, good. Because we still have the Super Bowl props. That could get really interesting. I mean, there could be some overtime bets, some two-point conversion bets, a lot of high payouts on those. But we'll have to assess the game theory once we know the tallies after this weekend. Murray, always good catching up. Go Packers. And let's see what happens with Mahomes. We hope to see him suit up and play this weekend because that's the only way we want to see all these guys play. But thank you very much, and we'll chat next week.
All right, man. Talk to you next week, buddy.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to everyone, especially Dan Orlovsky and John Murray. And really want to thank Matthew Holton and Ariel Awani for joining me. It's a big week. Got some plays for the card this weekend. And Ariel was really fun chatting Bills Mafia, as he is a card-carrying member for sure. And we had a nice chat about his kind of past about being a fan and then also upcoming weekend with Connor stepping into the octagon. We have some plays with Matthew as well. So go check out that pod as well. We're going to have a break in the football schedule. We'll see about next week. We'll have UFC. We'll have other stuff. Plenty to discuss as we move forward here in the Behind the Bets podcast. But I want to thank everyone for downloading, rating, reviewing, subscribing, and all that good stuff. Enjoy this weekend. Best of luck on your wagers, and we'll chat next week.